Well, you've heard our stories and how we were diagnosed, but we want to take a look at what it's like for people getting diagnosed right now. And the man to answer that question for us is co-founder and CEO of ADHD UK, Henry Shelford. And I'm pleased to say Henry joins us now. Henry, great to have you.
Great to be here. Thank you.
We want to sort of get a look at what it's like to get diagnosed. So right now, if somebody is going out there and thinking, I want to get diagnosed, what's the picture at the moment?
It's hard to describe how awful it is and that it's getting worse. There's this huge variance across the country. So you've got one part of the country where if you're an adult, the wait list is 12 weeks, which is brilliant, frankly. And another part of the country where it's 10 and a half years.
10 and a half years.
The person who's been waiting the longest in the country has been waiting 8.5 years so far.
Oh, for goodness sake.
If you're a child, shortest waitlist is 5 weeks. Longest, 5 years. So if you're a 13-year-old child, then in that area, you're going to age out before you get a diagnosis. And you do age out, right? Because the child assessment is different to the adult one. So if you turn 18, like, it doesn't apply. And so that team isn't set up to do it. And that's the big problem.
So why are we seeing these discrepancies? What's going on there? Are there certain health trusts that don't believe ADHD exists? Is there not enough money in those particular areas of the country? Why is there such a postcode lottery?
It's absolutely a prioritisation issue. Like, so we know that some areas recognise the need, fund it. We know that people otherwise, you know, they're getting diagnosed with anxiety, depression, they're struggling other aspects. There are costs to society and to the NHS of not getting the proper diagnosis. But we have an area where they've decided that the rise in the number of ADHD, instead of meeting the need, they've decided to absolutely corral it. So you now have to do a thing called the Do It Profiler. You can only pass the profiler if you are suicidal. A risk of harm to yourself or harm to others. And if you meet those criteria, only then can you get an assessment. What kind of system says you've got to be suicidal, having your family torn apart to get seen? It's absolutely outrageous and is being challenged. So you've got that kind of area. And then you've got areas going like, right, we need to put the systems in place. We need to resource properly. And we're going to have a plan. And people here are getting seen in 12 weeks.
One of the things we've talked about, Henry, is I suppose the question is for people who maybe are looking into this or know somebody with ADHD and don't know so much about it, is why that is such an issue. And one of the things we've talked about is the crippling impact that ADHD and particularly undiagnosed ADHD can have. And I think perhaps it would be useful to explain to people what that weight means, how that weight affects people.
The most brutal way you can see that is in the suicide figures. So we know that 1 in 10 men or boys with ADHD will at some point try and take their own life. It's 1 in 4 women or girls. 1 in 4. And we know that a woman in financial distress and ADHD is 32 times more likely to complete suicide than the baseline. And those figures tell you how hard it is to live with ADHD. And why getting a diagnosis, getting that understanding, getting that help is so critical. You know, until recently, the majority of funds to this charity were donated from parents whose children had taken their own life. You know, and I sit here right now, I've got checks from a funeral, and that's regular. And just people don't know that.
And I think it's an important story to get out there. I mean, we've talked about ADHD on here and our experiences with it, and just hearing that, it brings back the memory of being diagnosed and, as you said earlier, being made to jump through hoops that are sort of almost designed to trip up with someone with ADHD. I mean, maybe it's useful then to look at what the process is for someone if they're considering getting diagnosed now. I mean, the first thing to do is what? To go to the GP? Talk to them?
Yeah, go to your GP. Well, I think the problem is you do often feel like some GPs are great and some GPs you're going into battle. You know, we have instances where GPs just decline, or, you know, we had an instance where the GP lied. Like, someone said, I'd like an adult ADHD diagnosis, and the GP said, there's no service in this area. And we then gave them some advice to ask for an individual funding request, because an ADHD assessment is obligatory for the NHS to provide under the NICE guidelines. And so we were able to give them advice, at which point the GP said, oh, actually, we do have a service, but because it's so overwhelmed, we tell people that we don't. And we have a GP saying that if you weren't diagnosed as a child, then you can't have ADHD. Or if you're, you know, if you've managed to have a job or some kind of career, then you can't have ADHD. Like, so so step one is find out about it and learn a bit about it. We've got an adult ADHD screener. It's done by it's from the World Health Organization and Harvard University. It's a great thing to do. It gives you a PDF that you can hand to your GP, and it's great evidence to say, like, look, this screener recommends that, you know, I have high indicators of ADHD that I should be assessed. Please, can I do that? So go to your GP, learn about it. When you're going in, I'd write down why so that you don't get lost on, you get those things down and said, have that conversation. They will then refer you or should refer you. At that point, you want to ask, what's the wait list? How long is it? Now, look, when we've just done a big freedom of information on this, and it has taken us 6 months to get the data, and 70% of NHS healthcare board areas, healthcare boards, don't know their wait list. They don't even know. These are the people commissioning the service. They don't know how many people are waiting. Like,
what is going on there? That is surely a fundamental failure in their understanding of what ADHD is, surely. It goes back to what Sam and I talk about a lot, which is the naysayers, the people who don't believe ADHD exists.
And they don't realise the impact of it. They don't realise the impact it has on people.
Yeah. And if this is where we are starting from, how are we ever, ever going to change the waiting lists that some people are facing?
No, look, this is the battle, right? You know, if you look at, like, different mental health conditions and where they've got to, like, if you look at, say, depression, you know, 20 years ago, if you said you were depressed, people would be like, have you considered, like, turning that smile upside down? If you smile at the world, it'll smile back at you. And that was like, that was the kind of advice you'd get. Like, and people, you know, people now know that depression is not sadness, right? It's not the normal experience of sadness. And a good chunk of people know that getting a bit anxious or getting a bit worried is not chronic anxiety. But if you look at the battle, like, depression's done, you know, the world has moved on. Anxiety is probably halfway down that. We're right at the start. And, you know, our experience of focus is not the experience of other people's focus. So we still get advice from people, you know, you're having trouble with organization. Have you tried a list?
Do you know, I think that's one of the things we're starting to learn, just how sort of the baby steps almost of where we are with ADHD and people's understanding of it. Going back to the process of diagnosis, one of the things that's there to try and cut these waiting times is right to choose. Can you talk a bit about that and how that works and how effective that is or not effective?
Yeah, that's great. So where I got to is, so you go to your GP, you get the referral. And at that point, you should ask your GP, how long do you think I'll wait? We then contact the right to choose providers every month to find out what their waiting times are. And so our recommendation is go to our site, go to the Right to Choose page and get that information. And we put it there so that you can have that, make that decision. What's my local time? What's my Right to Choose time? Now, Right to Choose only applies in England. It does not apply in Wales, Scotland, Northern Ireland. And it gives you the right to have your referral directed anywhere in the NHS. And that includes subcontractors to the NHS. And those ones we colloquially call the Right to Choose providers, and they're private companies who specialise in an ADHD diagnostic provision. And you can go there. Now, to do that, you then go to their website, download their forms, give them to your GP. And
so one of the questions I was going to ask you is, this may be what you're about to say. Sorry, I've interrupted you. Classic ADHD. But one of the things I had was my GP actually was really helpful and really supportive, but he was concerned that the local commissioning group wouldn't pay for the treatment. There was some confusion about whether the NHS and my local NHS would be responsible for that costs and whether that they would improve that. So how do you get over that difficulty, if that's a question you face?
It definitely is. So to the extent that we've actually sort of got a formalized process for this. So there's a letter you can download off our site to give to a GP who doesn't understand what right, you know, the right to choose. And it's your right. It is your right to choose. So the GP, their right and is, do they refer or not? Your right is where that referral goes. Now, normally it just gets written to the local area, but you can redirect that. And our letter very politely tells the GP that the local commissioning service has to pay. Like, that's it. It's that whole set of questions just isn't a thing. Now, we are finding happening, though, is that NHS healthcare boards are making it very difficult for the right to choose providers to get paid. And so there are there is more paperwork happening on their side, and you'll find them needing all those forms filled in. But once you're in, you're in. Now, look, there's been a big problem then that Right to Choose, because of these massive failings across the country, Right to Choose is inundated. And so the biggest provider, Psychiatry UK, just closed their doors recently and said, we're taking no one new. We can't, we can't do it because we're getting more people every month than we can. Our current wait list is now, I think at that point, was 7 months, and it's going up a month every month. And like, we've got to stop, press pause on this and go through people. There are other providers, you find them on our site, so you can be seen much more quickly. I think the quickest at the moment is around 3 months, but we are expecting that to shoot up now. That main providers, that really big provider has closed their doors.
And then, once you've got to your diagnosis, there's then the diagnostic process, there's medical titration, and there's all the grief that comes with that. I mean, again, this process is one that, if it's drawn out, can be incredibly painful.
But like, there's drawn out and there's drawn out. Like, I know someone, they waited 3 and a bit years to get a diagnosis. And to be clear, for that person, that was their entire university career. So they were on a 3-year course. Their diagnosis, I think, was 4 weeks before their final exam. So their entire experience, their learning experience, their grade, everything impacted by that waiting list. And that grade, that experience will then define the start of their career. And the rest, they are fundamentally disadvantaged. They were diagnosed, and the person said, look, do you want to try medication as an option? They said yes. And they said, right, we'll put you on that list. See you in 2 years.
I know that there will be people out there who, as you've told us, will be in that limbo world of waiting for a diagnosis, waiting for treatment, waiting to be seen. What is your advice to them about how best to cope in those circumstances of, what can they do to keep themselves healthy and do their very, very best for themselves and their families and their jobs and their employers and all, in all those different ways that they're going to be trying to survive? What would you say to them?
I do, it's something that just frightens me so much, right? So we talked about those statistics, and just the damage that's getting done, the difficulty. And you talked about coping mechanisms. Like, that is a time for coping mechanisms. Whereas once you're diagnosed, and we really don't who wants to cope? We talk about strategies, we want to do things. We see people with ADHD doing incredible things, being top of their game, and top of, every game, and getting there is, what we want for everyone. In terms of what to do in the interim, and actually, I think, Sam, I think you've talked to this, which is everyone, and to be honest, it's pretty much everyone with any mental health condition, is where is the line between me and the condition? What's me and my unique personality, and what's the condition? And because I need to really know, because I need to know what's a mountain for me and a molehill for others, but also I need to know where I'm making a mountain out of the molehill. I mustn't enable myself to be awful. I need to know when to be kind to myself and when to really push hard on myself.
It was an identity crisis. For me, it was an identity crisis.
Yeah.
And so what I would say is learning about ADHD, and honestly, one of the best things you can do is go to ADHD groups. So we have multiple groups going on at almost any one time, they're free to go to, donate if you can. And what happens is they're all virtual, so you don't have to join with your camera. You can just listen and lurk. But what happens is you're listening, you hear people say something about themselves, and you're just whoa, that is me. And it really helps you define that line of what's you, what's ADHD. And in doing so, also people talk about their strategies for that issue. And you learn from that, and you grab these strategies. And each one, you can have things that are really huge problems in your life, and you get a strategy in place, and it just, poof, it goes. It's no longer an issue. And that is so wonderful. And so that's what I would do. When people are first diagnosed, they talk about having three emotions. There is, there's a mourning, there's an anger, for how hard it's been, and how life could have been. And there's a peace of this just makes sense.
Finally, I've got some answers.
Now I know. Mm.
And that brings with itself a huge peace. And then there's a joy, right? There's a joy for how life can be from now. There's how I can change it. really get that success that and those achievements that I've always known I'm capable of being thwarted in, and that is joyful. And that joy, though, is coming from building those strategies, getting that understanding, getting it so that you can be the successful person you can be. Like, and so it's that joy piece, that learn, that's where you want to go towards.
I think that's a really
I found it
positive
whole conversation incredibly moving. Oh. I'm afraid, Henry, apologies, been sitting here weeping during our conversation.
Don't apologize. I mean, I think you know, we've been very clear, this is an incredible emotional journey for all of us. I mean, when you talked about that waiting time and you talked about the impact on people where they're waiting, it was like a gut punch for me. It was like I was back there again.
But it's knowing how many, do you know what, actually the statistics I find so difficult is knowing how many young men and women are undiagnosed, because I know that those are the ones going off into the workplace for the first time, or the ones going off to university and they're leaving home and they're losing all of that structure and support from their parents, and they're alone. And you know, you describing that young lad, I think you said, got diagnosed only just before his exams, that's a terrible state of affairs, because we are letting down an entire generation, and that's awful.
And we've been letting them down for a long time, right? ADHD wasn't formally recognised by the NHS until the year 2000 for kids, 2008 for adults. That's the reason, you know, we've got, you know, limited services that are having to be built up. But it's also the reason why so many adults like me, you know, coming forward going, this is like, I need a diagnosis. I need that. And, you know, instead we're having people going, oh, like, has everyone caught this off TikTok?
Oh.
Yeah.
And that
is one of the sort of main drivers for us doing this podcast, is to say this thing is real and it affects people in, you know, incredibly harmful ways. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things, though, that is shining through all of this for me is that message of hope from you, that there is the resources on your website. There are groups. I think one of the really important things to remember, and I wish I'd known this at the time, is that there are groups. There is help for you while you are waiting for a diagnosis as well. And we'll obviously make sure that people have access to your website and the resources that are there, and that if people are waiting and they find themselves in that situation, they can seek out interim help.
No, thank you. And Katie, I also find this very emotional. I did a big interview on live TV over the weekend, and I was asked about me and about medication and the fact that right now there's a medication crisis, and I'm impacted, so mine's going to run out shortly. And I was asked, what was my plan? And I had to admit, like, that basically I'm trying really hard not to think about it.
Haven't got one, actually. Yeah. And I know that I'm sitting here getting upset. I know I'm one of the lucky ones. I've got a diagnosis. I do okay without the meds. I'm not suicidal without the meds. But my heart breaks for those people that are not in that position, and the fact that we just haven't woken up to what a nightmare a lot of people live through. And that is very upsetting.
I mean, I'll tell you one thing as well. We've we've had a conversation a number of times where Katie is probably the more positive person about ADHD. And
usually,
I tend to be the one who is pretty down on the whole thing and is not massively. Mm. But I feel like I'm the one who's trying to bring the ray of sunshine today. I'm not quite sure what that says about this conversation. Sorry, if I'm the one who's trying to be positive. But, I think we have to say that we are doing our best to try and shine a spotlight on this, and you're doing some great work, Henry. And we'd love to talk to you again, and we really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today.
Yeah, thank you for coming along.
Yeah, well, thank you.